Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Deutschland Couch Show. Man, it's been a minute since we've been on, but we are back. We're gonna just jump right into the action like we always do. Normally we would go in order with what I ha we have, but today I kind of want to just get the elephant in the room out of the way. Inter Milan. What the fuck? That was the worst 90 minutes I ever experienced. And those are the 90 minutes I could have been spending doing something else, but I had to watch the match in pure pain and agony because I had to, in order to know what the hell is going on when I record. But you did so well a couple weeks ago, but then you go into shambles. First of all, 25 chances, 7 on freaking target, and you couldn't even find the back of the net. I could even hit the back of the net, and I'm not even athletic for fuck's sake. Then, of course, when it came to the defensive issues, you had, of course, Sampdoria taking the ball away like it was nothing. There was no defense. The attack couldn't hit a barn door, even if their life depended on it. The midfield was in shambles. I mean, the only person who really gets any recognition in this match is Onana, who made sure things didn't get any worse. This was one of the worst performances I've seen from Inter the whole entire season. And I actually think this is one of the worst performances I've ever seen in quite some time from Inter. I mean, there was ones that happened when I was first starting out, but this is the most recent one that was absolute dog shit.
Yeah, I can't think of a worse one. Honestly, I'm trying to think back. Over the last whatever 5, 7 years, I can't think of a. This is pretty bad. I mean, there's other ones that are similarly bad, but this one was horrendous. And here's the thing. I got a new word for you. You know what I call this?
What?
Lazio syndrome. Because you know how Lazio goes up against the big teams. Not this week, not this week, but usually goes up against the big teams, puts this together, this great performance, and then when there's playing against a team that's not as good, or is in the bottom of the league, or is in mid-table, they drop a dud. Because if you look at that's the criticism that we're always putting together against when we talk about Lazio. Look at Inter. Look at the Super Cup in Saudi Arabia. Masterclass. Milan Derby, masterclass. Empoli, Monza, Sampdoria. You see, there's this. It's very similar to what we always say about Lazio. And it's just like, I don't know what it is. Actually, I do know what it is, but it says you can't have a game. We have 25 chances, all right, 4 on target, and the other team has 7 chances and 2 on target. And the team with seven shots has a better conversion rate in front of goal than you are. You also they had barely any of the ball. If I have this right, they had 36% possession, and barely had any of the ball. And most of their possession came from when they were taking the ball away from you. So they didn't do anything. And again, credit goes to the back line. I think they did really well. Odera had very little to do at all. And I know Sampdoria is not the easiest place to go and get results. It's, even if their team isn't good, they have an energy with their fans that it's a difficult environment to go into. But still, it's just one of those things that you got to get it done. And I know the Roma dropped points this week as well, but the difference is the Lecce goalie this week was superhuman, where where Sampdoria's goalie didn't have to do anything because you mishandled the majority of your chances. And to me, it's one of those things where like you can't expect. I think it's incredibly unfair to Lautaro Martinez and Dzeko to a degree that we're expecting Lautaro to have a 10 out of 10 performance every single game. And we're expecting Dzeko to have an 8 out of 10 performance in every single game. And when they don't do that, nothing else works. It's collapse. It's nothing in the midfield. It's erratic defensively. It's the goalkeeper is good, but top to bottom is just a total mess. Now, Lautaro is capable of putting it together at least a 9 out of 10 performance. I would say 4 out of 5 games. And Dzeko is capable of putting together a 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 performance in the same, the same amount of games as well. But the problem is when those guys have a bad game, the rest of the team has to pick it up and has to perform, because they're performing the majority of the time, especially in victories and defeats. They're coming up with the big moments. They're coming up with what Inter need when everyone else is slacking. Now, the one time that they needed moral support from Lukaku, from Barella, from Brozovic, from Mkhitaryan. Actually, Mkhitaryan played okay. But for the majority of your team, couldn't step up. And I think that's the biggest problem with Inter, is you're expecting Lautaro and Dzeko, and you can put Barella in there, I guess, to have a 9 out of 10 performance every single game. And the second they don't, or they have a bad game, and again, these guys are allowed to have poor games. You know, we shouldn't expect them to be able to play like this every single day. But when they have, when they're on having an off day, the rest of the pieces do need to step up, because it's those two or those three that are carrying Inter the rest of the time. And Lautaro was bad, Dzeko was bad. That's just a reality. But if you look at the way everything has gone with Inter Milan, like from like a total standpoint of their performing, the rest of the teammates, when they are not at their best, need to contribute, because there are so many games where no one else is doing anything except Dzeko and Lautaro, and they're delivering. The second they don't play well, the rest of the thing doesn't happen. And again, I think Inter's issues come down to two things. It's winning mentality, it's finishing the chance in front of goal. You cannot have 25 chances in front of goal and only have 4 on target. Now, you are allowed to have 25 chances on goal and 16 on target. That means the goalie was superhuman, you know? But you can't have a game where most of the chances that you're taking aren't going. And to be fair, the 4 chances that you did take, they weren't challenging to the goalkeeper at all. So, and yeah, we can talk about Barella, throwing up his arms every time he doesn't get the ball. That doesn't help. We can talk about Lukaku being a shell of himself from when he was at Inter last time. We can talk about how the midfield has no organization. We can talk about the fact that the defense is over exaggerating where they need to be positioned. We can talk about the fact that you have a midfield on the outside as well that aren't doing their, I can nitpick everything, but you get what I'm saying. It's just a total, this was a train wreck from every way you could possibly put it. And that's why I don't feel comfortable giving any sort of blame on Lautaro and Dzeko, because those two guys are the ones performing most of the time. So when they have a bad game, the blame has to go on the whole thing. But again, the whole thing was an absolute, it just is a total mess. It didn't look like a Serie A team. It looked like a team that just met each other yesterday. That's how bad it looked like, at least from my standpoint.
I mean, I will 100% agree with you on that point. And you did mention that it is unfair to Lautaro Martinez, mostly because he's the one who this team is centered around. And when you're the one who has to carry the whole team and nobody else is stepping up, that's a huge issue. Because obviously fatigue sets in. And there will be times where you're gassed and you're not going to give that a stellar performance that you're used to putting out every like 4 matches out of 5. So then the blame usually goes to him, but no one else is being held accountable, which is a huge issue. And then, of course, and then Barella was doing his crybaby thing where Daddy Lukaku was like, "Me, stop doing that. Stop crying like a little
bit." You know what about that, though? I know Lukaku played well, but I have so much respect for him for doing that. Because enough is enough. I mean, and it, this isn't the first time, but someone needs to call him out on his BS. And I mean, Barella's not going to step to Lukaku. He'll get bodied in that situation. But someone needs to call him out on his bullshit. You know what I mean?
He's like, because that video you sent me was absolutely freaking hilarious. For those who didn't get to see it, you literally see Lukaku telling Barella, stop it. Stop it. You're making yourself look like a fool. And it was absolutely hilarious.
But, yeah, I got to give my guy, Uncle Charmin, for the video on that one. I was, so it was just, it was just something that we talk about all the time. And it's just like, you're playing so bad. The whole team was awful. He can't be screaming about getting the ball. Because the last couple times, now I didn't agree with him getting subbed off, but the chances he did create did nothing. So why is Lukaku going to pass you the ball in that situation? At least Lukaku's getting in the box and misfiring, but he's getting he's actually creating something for for Inter. And again, it was everyone was terrible, but at least Lukaku was getting in the right positions. And again, I can't say anything more than that, but I respect him so much for doing it, because somebody, it needed to be said.
Yeah, I mean, but just overall, that is 90 minutes I'm never going to get back. And when I was watching it, I was like when I was first starting out and Inter would lose matches in a terrible way like this, I'm like, give me a bottle or something so I could throw that shit against the freaking wall or something, because I wanted to break something so bad, because it was, I'm like, the anger and the frustration that was going through my veins, I'm like, holy fuck. I'm like, I'm actually not gonna lie. I actually turned it off in the 63rd minute, because if I watched any more, I would have thrown my laptop, and I need that to watch matches. So I had to like do it for my own health and well being, because I'm like, yeah, pretty much this is the whole entire match. I've seen what I need to see. I know exactly what I'm gonna say, and because I had to do it for my health. Because if I watched any more, I would have literally lost it. And we do not need me losing it right now.
Anyway, I just want to say one more thing, and then we can move on. But the worst part about all this isn't the performance, isn't what we saw. It's the context of and the consequences of what we saw. Now, what we saw is Roma drop points. We saw Lazio get beat. We've been seeing AC Milan drop points, Atalanta won, but there was a 3-point gap currently. You could have taken it to 5 if you had won your game because of Roma drawing and Lazio losing. So you could have created a bigger gap at that part of the table. And again, I think you're making Champions League, but if you see the table, it is very close from 5-2. So I think that's the worst part. That's the biggest consequence from all of this.
Yeah, definitely. And now just to get the other elephant out of the room, let's talk about something that is obviously a issue, not just with what you had brought up with Roma, the pitch issues going on in Serie A. Like, tell me your thoughts of what's going on with the pitch issues.
Okay, so the reason I brought this up is because of the status of Lecce's pitch. Again, that's not why we didn't win the game. So I'm not using this as an excuse. It's just something that has been brought to my attention again. Now, I talked about this a few weeks ago with Ryan in regards to, you know, when you go to a ground that's difficult, it should not be because your standard of pitch is bad. You should be looking at that and saying, this is difficult because their fans are amazing. They're really loud. They make you intimidated. That should be the reason. Or, you know, your team is very good. However, and again, sorry for the fan bases I'm about to put on blast, but Lecce's pitch is not up to standard. If they were in the Champions League, they would not be allowed to participate. But they couldn't play their games there. They should have certain regulations on what the standard of Serie A pitch should be. if you go up on YouTube or sorry, on Google and Google what are the 15 worst football pitches in Europe, Serie A has 5 of them. That's a problem. You look at Lecce, horrible pitch. Again, no disrespect. Fiorentina, horrible. We know what happens when Sassuolo. The grass isn't even the right color. I mean, I'm laughing, but it's also a problem. You look at Empoli. Empoli's pitch isn't up to standard. Spezia's pitch isn't up to standard. Verona's pitch is awful. And if you want to go to Serie B, you got Cagliari, which is horrible. So you have those that are not up to standard, and then you have like Atalanta and Napoli who are up to standard, but they're still dumps. And I don't know what the solution is to this quote unquote issue, but you shouldn't be able to have an advantage because you play on horrible grass. Lecce have done a good job. They deserve their points. They're doing their thing, but they shouldn't be able to have an advantage on the field because of how bad it is. The reason teams struggle there at Sassuolo as well and others is because the grass is horrible. The teams that play there aren't used to playing on that low quality of grass. So I just think, I don't know what the solution is, but we seriously have a problem with 5 or 6 stadiums in Italy with the lack of standard. And it's easy to say, oh, we'll get a new stadium, but we can't just snap our fingers and do it. But there needs to be something because we don't see this type of pitch in England. We don't really see this type of pitch in Germany. Yet this is something that comes up again and again and again. Not why we lost, but it's something that needs to be brought to attention because there are 5 or 6 places to play in Italy that have horrible standards on the pitch. And because of that, those teams have advantages that they – again, if you have great fans and you're loud, like Sampdoria, like Genoa, that's fine. But if your advantage is we play on a crappy pitch, I just think that we have an issue in regards to all that.
Yeah, the only solution, like obviously everybody can't get a new stadium that's not financially feasible. I mean, the only thing that you could do is like, grass, if you really think about it, does not take that long to grow. Either you scalp the whole entire pitch and either install, what do they call that crap?
Or move it to a different location.
Move it to a different location. Or you would easily just take the old layers of grass off, get everything like neutralized and plant new seed. Or you would get the turf that's already grown a little bit, and then you just seam them together, and then you start really taking care of that lawn, because that is the only thing that is financially doable and could provide.
Yeah, true. But I think the Italian FA should contribute money wise. Give some of that Paramount Plus money that we didn't ask for, and put it on the pitch, you know?
Exactly.
This is not a problem in other countries. I think that is a big issue. It's not. I can't think of one German Bundesliga stadium that's not amazing. I can't think. Okay, there's a few in the Premier League, but there's very small amounts in the Premier League. France, we have similar issues. And La Liga, the majority is good, but there are some issues there. But we need to get to a place where our field sucks should not be an advantage in a game of high magnitude. We didn't lose this because of this, but it's just something that I think to be dealt with eventually.
Yeah, I agree. And so all pitch issues aside, let's just tell us what you thought of the Roma game and like what needs to be improved.
Okay, the Roma game wasn't bad. The result was terrible. Again, pitch aside, we played fairly well, but we are lacking some things that need to be fixed. Obviously, Mourinho, we're not going to win games if you're making subs with 8 minutes left. There's not enough time for us to do that. So I think this was a mistake. You cannot wait that long. Things weren't working. We did not adjust. We did not step up and improve our circumstances when we could have. And again, it was a rough game. We didn't play poorly. We need playmakers. Another thing is we need playmakers. This might sound crazy, but if Henry Mkhitaryan did not go to Inter and he signed an extension with Roma, I think we would be on Napoli's tail, genuinely. Because the only thing we lack in our team is playmakers. Now, you can say Zalewski at wingback has playmaking abilities and intangibles, but you know it is what it is. But playmaking in the midfield is our issue. Matic, Cristante, Kamara, he hasn't played in weeks, but just an example. The majority of Roma's midfielders are holding midfielders. They're not there to go forward and create chances for the team for the most part. Not to say that Cristante and Matic can't put a deep ball into the box and stuff like that. They can do it, but that's not their particular role. Outside of that, we have Pellegrini, I still think he's having a fairly good season, but he is regressing in the way he played last year. I think that's due to the fact that we don't have playmakers, and we can't allow him to play the role that he would like to play. Now, Gini Wijnaldum coming back is huge because he's a playmaker in midfield. But I think a guy like Mkhitaryan in this team, even at 34 years old, Roma would be a much more dangerous proposition. Again, with Abraham and Dybala up top, that's a big proposition. You know, that's a threat as well. But having a guy in the midfield who's going to create, because as we know, Dybala and Abraham are going to play very high up in the pitch. We need someone in basically behind them, being able to feed them the ball. And obviously, Pellegrini is having to do a lot of work where he's going forward, but he's also coming behind and helping the midfield. We need someone who can sit right behind and do some stuff. And again, in the summer, we're gonna have to deal with this. But I think it's not as bad as Lautaro Inter, but Dybala is our main playmaker. Tammy Abraham is not a playmaker. He's good with link-up play. He has playmaking abilities, but he is a goal scorer. He is a facilitator sometimes in the attack, but he's not a playmaker by nature. If you stuck a playmaker in Roma's midfield, you know, going forward, I think Roma are a much more dangerous team in a lot of ways, because Dybala is going to do his thing and one of the best players in the league this season, one of the best playmakers this season. But we needed somebody. We need someone in midfield, a couple. I mean, I'll take one, but I'd like two or three players in our team that we can put in midfield that have more playmaking intangibles. Again, I respect what Cristante and Matic do, because that's holding midfielders are very important. But I think the thing that we lack in this team is a playmaker that can help contribute to Dybala and Abraham up top. The performance wasn't bad, really. It was just sort of it was frustrating for multiple reasons, but it's the substitution thing. It was also we just need another playmaker, and that's not going to change until we get into the summer transfer window, probably. I think we'll be fine to make the Champions League and stuff like that. But I think watching that game, you see what Roma lack. Also, obviously, how difficult it was for the circumstances we already discussed. But that's sort of where I think. But I'm very confident we'll make the Champions League. That's something that we need to improve to really mount a challenge. Now, if we get a playmaker next year, I think we can mount a challenge. So that's just what we need right now, or what we need for next season. And it's something that we kind of need to look into in the summer as well.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, speaking of Mkhitaryan, hope that nasty gash on your arm heals quickly, dude. Yeah, did you see that gash on his arm?
Mm-hmm.
That was gnarly. I mean, but anyway, but then again, I'm hardcore, so yeah, it kind of fits. But yeah, I mean, that is literally one of the key issues. Like, I do agree that if Mkhitaryan did not come to Inter, you guys would be right up there with Napoli just because of the way he's able to facilitate the match. And also, he's one of the few players on Inter who has those winning intangibles that we always keep discussing. I mean, even when, like, if Barella's having an off day, Mkhitaryan is literally there stepping up and taking hold of the midfield and saying, trying to do his best to facilitate Martinez, Dzeko, or if it's Lukaku, he facilitates the ball to Lukaku at times. And then he's also plays a really key role in the defensive aspect as well whenever it's needed. I mean, he literally, like I said, when some of our other midfielders lack, he's the one who's taking the bull by the horns and just taking over, saying, hey, this is what we need to do. Let's get it done. And if you had that back on Roma, like I said, you guys would be very, very dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, Mkhitaryan or someone like him, that was kind of my point. But yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. Continue. Sorry about that.
No worries. But overall, the team didn't play too horribly bad, but just the lack of playmaking cost you guys in the end. But overall, still a decent performance. And obviously, Lecce did what they needed to do, and they got the points. But in the end, it resolves to pitch issues and the lack of playmakers Roma has. But in speaking of playmakers, and eventually, I mean, I know it's only still winter, but summer's going to come sooner rather than later. So is there anyone off the top of your head that you would like to see? Like, if you had to pick one player right now that you would love to see in the playmaking role on Roma, who would you think and why?
David Ferrazzi from Sassuolo. I mean, without being said, I mean, it's just like we've been chasing him for a year. It's eventually going to happen. He says, I only want Roma. He had opportunities to go to Inter. He had opportunities to go to Dortmund. He's had several, not agreements, but there have been clubs who have tried to poach him to try to do that. I think with him in a very polar Sassuolo team, he's having another great season. He understands what it means to be a Roman. He understands the culture. He's a Roma Academy graduate. His best friend is Pellegrini. He comes in. He takes the pressure off. He's a playmaker. Now he's a CM, but he's a playmaker. Pellegrini will have the luxury to go higher up on the pitch. You look at Ferrazzi. He can go forward and do the playmaking role, but he also can tuck back and be a holding midfielder if he's asked to. I think he just opens up a lot for the team, and I think understanding the Roma way, the culture, everything that's being built, he'd be a perfect signing. And again, it's going to happen. It's just inevitable because he's not going anywhere else. So it's basically when Roma and Sassuolo agree to a transfer, it's donezo. But he's someone I have in mind. I can think of a few other people, but I think him and maybe another piece would be perfect. I think you put him in that team and immediately Roma are a title favorite. Now, if we had someone like that now, Napoli still win the league. So I just want to make that clear. But I think we would be – I think we'd get second. I think we'd be on their tail a little bit. But I do not think there is not a scenario where Roma have that playmaker and win the league. Napoli is going to win the league regardless, even if we had that. But my point is – it'd be closer than it looks now. Because now we're at a point where Napoli games don't even fucking matter anymore. All we see is Kvara, the best player in the league, and Osimhen, the second best player in the league, score goals and do the thing. They could not do anything for the next 2 months and they still win the league. So it's like irrelevant now, that, as good as they've been and stuff like that. But a playmaker for Roma puts them into a totally different place next season, and we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, fair enough. Moving on. And speaking of the Lazio syndrome, Lazio had the opportunity to take on Atalanta this weekend. And apparently, breaking news, Atalanta may have an attack after all.
Yeah, they were, again, still identity crisis because I think they have issues. But they're, I think really it's between those two. In the Champions League, I'm sorry, AC Milan, I don't believe in you. Even though you won the Champions League, when you don't know your record signing's actual position and you refuse him to play in there, I don't believe in you. You've been crap for a month. Inter is in there. as much as I think that is possible, I think it's indefensible that they're not going to make it. They're definitely going to make it. And I think Rome are going to make it. So it's going to be between Lazio and Atalanta. Now, Lazio thing that was going for them is we always win the big games. But then they lost this game. And that, like, I've changed my mind completely. Lazio, Immobile is not doing what Immobile does. They're not as dangerous in attack. Their midfield's great. Defensively, they've been good. Stuff like that. But Atalanta has won most of their big games or gotten points from most of their big games. And now they have this number two attacker in the league. And Lokman, their number two option, has 9 goals as a 20-year-old. They're lethal up top. Now, they're not Atalanta at their pump lethal like what they were with Gomez, Muriel, and Zapata. But they're dangerous enough going forward. My only criticism would be that their defense isn't strong enough to – they concede too many goals. And, again, they don't concede a lot, but they concede enough for it to be a problem. And it's the way they concede their goals that I think is an issue. But their attack is dangerous. Now, I don't think you have to stop everything you do to stop the attack. I think you can break it down. It can be stopped. But they are dangerous, and I don't think there's any disputing that. I think Lokman's going to probably get – 20-ish goals this season. He's at 14 this season. I think he could get to in the 20s. And I think the other kind of pieces that they have are very productive. They're doing a great job. They're inconsistent in midfield, but they have enough to put it together. And they do seem to show up for the big games a lot of the time. Defensively is the only issue I have, and it's not a bad defense. It's just how it always has been. They're just not strong enough to withstand a pushback in a sort of back and forth type of game. But in the attack, they're absolutely fantastic. And Lazio kind of did the opposite of what they do. Win the big games, lose the ones that are not important. And now they lost the big game, and we'll see how they react to that. But Alonso's attack, I've been blown away by. Again, there's still problems here, but I don't think these are really going to be something that's going to prevent them from making the Champions League. Because between those two at the moment, and I could have a different answer tomorrow, but at the moment I think Atalanta has the edge because that attack is dangerous, and they're going to score goals in every game, and it's going to come down to whether they can defend enough to do what they need to do. But a really good performance from them, and they look good up front.
Yeah, I mean, Atalanta, like, mostly throughout the season has had issues both in the attack and defense, but witnessing them the past few months, like more so the 2 months in general, their attack has really stepped up, where the defense continues regardless from the start of the season to now, is tends to be one of the more key issues going forward. I mean, the attack has a lot of good, great players on it, not to the extent of what it was of several years ago with prime Zapata and
all that stuff. I mean, they had like 8-90 goals in the season, so that's impossible to replace. But
overall, they have really stepped it up over the past 2 months. And if the defense was on the exact same page as the attack, Atalanta would be. I wouldn't say they would be where they were several years ago, but they would be close. They would be. I would still say they would finish in the Europa League, but they would be knocking on the door of the Champions League, because when they were red hot, they were red hot. I mean, we all saw. We were all scared of going to the Bergamo, and now not a lot of teams are scared. But
no.
But if they were to get that defense back where it was routinely being consistent, then you should be scared, because when that team from several years ago was deadly.
Yeah, but real quick. So the defense, the it's not the people they it's not the players they have in defense, because I think they're Di Morale and Scafani are that's a good center back pairing, and they got Zappacosta on one side. They have I forgot who they have on the other side, but they have a decent defense. It's not bad. The problem is they play a style of football that's going to leave them exposed in the back, and because of that, they concede goals. So it's the system that makes their defense weak. And, for example, this isn't a problem Okay, it is a problem, but it's only a problem because they're Atalanta. If they were Torino or Sassuolo, no one would view this as a problem, because those teams are not in, they don't have the ambition for Champions League. The only reason there's issues with the defense is because they're trying to make the Champions League, and that's something that could potentially stop them. But the system is why their defense will leak goals. It's not because they don't have great defenders back there. I think they have a decent back line. It's not the best, but I think it's fairly good. So it's the system. And Gasperini, he's going to gamble with this because he's gambled with it before. And this season, he's rightfully to do so. That might stop them, but if the attack can hit the way, at least somewhat to the way they hit before, I think they'll be fine. But the defense is only a problem because it's Atalanta. If this was somebody else not in the European race, it would not be viewed as sort of a weakness. So it's not a bad defense. It's a bad defense in the context of teams that are going to go and make the Champions League are going to try to do so.
Okay, that makes sense. And then, of course, Lazio breaking away from the narrative. I mean, do you think they gambled too much with this match?
No, I don't think they played poorly. And again, I don't like saying that. And Cluj are going to absolutely annihilate you tomorrow. Actually, I don't know if that's going to be the case, but I hope so.
I wish I could watch that match live.
but they play tomorrow in the Conference League. But they didn't play badly. They were just the better. Atalanta just were better than them. They took advantage of their chances more often. They were more of a threat, and they just couldn't deal with the firepower. Again, I think this is a match that screws them up, though, because how are they going to react to this? Usually when they lose, it's to a team that they're not supposed to lose to. Well, Atalanta going in are probably a better team than Lazio. No offense, or all offense. I'm just curious to see what are they going to do after losing a big game. We see what they do when they lose to little smaller teams, but now that they lost to a big team, how are they going to react like that? They have Roma in a couple months. Will this distract them, or will they just get back on course? And that will be the determining factor of whether or not they'll continue to be a threat in this. I do think they'll be a threat in the Champions League. I think it'll be between them and Atalanta. But it's all gonna come down to the reaction.
Yeah, definitely. And now moving on to some Bundesliga action. We'll just start off with the robbery with RB Leipzig and Union Berlin.
Okay, first things first, Union Berlin did exactly what they're supposed to do. They weren't excellent. They were not good in this game. But you have to look at the situation is they got them back in the game. They were aggressive. They kept pushing, even though they were being ripped from limb to limb. Anybody who watched the games know this was not – they weren't really in this for large parts of it. They found you scored a wonder goal. Then they get the penalty. Was a penalty. They convert. Amazing. But then, obviously, they did what champions do, and that's win games that they're not supposed to win or get points that they're not supposed to get. Now, the problem is Leipzig scored a completely legal goal. I don't understand. I still don't understand how that wasn't given. It was not offsides. There was not a foul. There was not a handball. They said it was interfering in the play, and I call bullshit. And I'm not trying to go into any conspiracies, but it just came across like, oh, they just want Union Berlin to win this game, don't they? because it was completely legal. Then Leipzig go on a run at the end, almost score twice, and then the biggest compliment I can give on Berlin, because this was a daylight robbery, is the defense they played in the last possession was absolutely phenomenal. But Leipzig will feel hard done by. It's true. Leipzig should not have should have buried this game long before that point. But they'll feel hard done by because they know that goal should have stood. And the problem is losing this game will damage their position in the Champions League. And at the end of the season, if they don't make the Champions League, we could be looking back to this particular moment to be the reason that they didn't win. Credit for Union Berlin. They deserved something from the game because of the way they fought in the second half, but they did not deserve 3 points. It should have been a draw. And again, a draw may not help anyone either. But to me, I think they got this one wrong. It was a bad call. And we don't see a lot of bad calls in Germany, but that one could be very damaging. Leipzig absolutely were the better team by far. It wasn't even close. But I do give the Union Berlin the respect for the way they fought in the second half and for the defense they played on the last possession.
I 100% agree. I mean, I was watching that after because obviously I was watching the Super Bowl, but I would rather watch a football match over the Super Bowl. And since I didn't have a chance to really watch it earlier, I was like, okay, let's watch this one. And so, yeah, it was definitely a highway robbery. That goal should have stood. They should have gotten at least a draw from this game because of how well Leipzig performed. Obviously, giving props to Union Berlin, yeah, you deserve something, but in the end, the goal for Leipzig should have stood. And it was blatantly obvious that it was a goal. And like you said, you normally don't see bad officiating in Germany, but this was one of the very few calls that they got absolutely wrong. And it could come to bite them in the butt, but we'll see what happens. But overall, both teams, Leipzig performed at the top quality that we're used to seeing from them. Union Berlin has had a lot of great performances this season, but this one was good, but it wasn't up to the standard that we have been seeing from them. But just overall, the referees got this wrong, and hopefully it doesn't cost Leipzig in the end, but just overall, very well done match from both sides.
Yeah, for sure. Now let's talk about the Hertha thing. What happened?
Unfortunately, I did not have the luxury to watch this match, but I was keeping up with the scores and the statistics and everything else. And I'm sitting there like, tell me this is not happening. Tell me this is not happening. How are we losing to Hertha Berlin? I mean, we were doing so well for so long, and then Sommer gets transferred, and ever since then, we've had some okay performances, but we've been terrible. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, you can't pin this on that transfer, though, because it's not the goalkeeping that's the issue. It's scoring the goals. Because, I mean, I don't need to spell it out for you. Schalke twice, Hertha twice, 2 points from both those games. Schalke are going to get relegated, unfortunately, and Hertha are probably have the worst roster in the entire Bundesliga. I mean, if it softens the blow, Schalke also took points off of Frankfurt, who are doing very well.
Yeah, but overall, we're going back into those old habits of can't even hit a barn door, and that is a key issue. And I actually am not really going to say much, except because at this point, it's a broken record. It's the same old stuff with Gladbach.
With a better coach, with a slightly better coach, but it's the same shit.
Just with a slightly better coach, exactly. So there's really not much to take away that this with the only thing that you could say about this, and the only takeaway is that they continue to have the same issue over and over and over again. And until that changes, it's going to be the same narrative. And it's just getting annoying to constantly having to repeat myself over the same bullshit. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But in regards to the topic that people are bringing up, Marcus Thuram, I'm going to say it. I know there's a lot of teams that are interested. My Italy boys are interested in Marcus Thuram. I'm going to tell the Inter fans right now, has my side dude, is Mönchengladbach, I will tell you from experience, Inter, he's a risk. Here's why. Yes, there's the plus side of him being really great at facilitating chances and being able to find the back of the net. Yes, he scores incredible goals every so often, but the problem is he misses a ton of chances. So that would be the risk you're willing to take on Marcus Thuram. you're getting a yes. Inter would be getting another great depth piece, a person who is known for scoring incredible goals, but you're getting a player who misses a lot more chances than he makes goals. And for any other, even if Inter don't sign him, but for any other team that wants to go after him, that is a risk that you're going to be taking if you sign him. Am I saying don't do it? Absolutely not. But I would just say go with caution if you do decide to sign him. Because, like I said, he can score great goals every once in a while, but the issue is he has a tendency of missing a lot of chances, and that could cost the team going forward.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think as a number one option, you are dumb if you're going to do this deal. Now, you're going to get him for free probably, so that's a plus you can take. Again, misses a whole bunch of chances, scores goals, and is a very valuable piece as a number two or number three option. Now, if you're going to bring him in to be Dzeko for next season, then maybe. But at this point, I think Dzeko's a better player. Again, the numbers are not that different. Now, as a depth piece, it's brilliant. Bringing a guy like that off the bench is how you win the Champions League. It's how you win the big games. That's an important thing to have, but he misses too many chances. And you don't want to end up with a bad situation, which you could be, and you could put yourself into by doing this. Now, if you're looking for the missing piece of the puzzle, this is not the answer. So I think that I'm not saying don't sign him. If you're a team that wants to win the Champions League, don't sign him. But if you're a team that has ambitions of potentially missing, let me put this differently. If your expectation is to win the Champions League, this is not the player for you. But if you have ambitions of trying to push and make and win the Champions League, then that's a decent signing as a depth piece as a number two. Or if you have a really good coach, like one of the best in the world, that can make him into a monster. Those are kind of the only scenarios I can see. He's a good player, and I would take him on a free deal just like everybody else. But you should be a little cautious about the number of changes he misses. If you're looking for an interesting piece to get, if you're Inter Milan, try his brother. And I'm not even joking when I say that. His brother is a 21 years old midfielder at Nice. He's been there for a couple of years. He's a really good player. He's someone that that a lot of teams could use. So I'm not trying to say don't sign him, or I'm not saying his brother's better or whatever, but his brother at this moment is a better signing for a team that's trying to push and win big trophies than he is at the moment. Again, if you believe that your manager can mold this guy into a monster like other managers have done with other players before, then do it. But if you don't have a coach with those type of skills, then don't do it. I don't love it for Chelsea because I don't think Graham Potter has those skills. I don't love it for Inter because I don't think Inzaghi has those skills, no offense. For Bayern, I like it because Julian Nagelsmann has those attributes that can turn a player into something, a monster, basically. I don't think City will want him, but like a Pep would do it, a Mourinho could do it. There's a few managers out there that could do it from that aspect. But as a winning team, this should not be your first option. As a depth piece, I love it though.
Yeah, definitely. And before we head out, we're just obviously after waiting and waiting and waiting, the Champions League has finally resumed. Yesterday we had AC Milan actually beating Spurs. So what was your thoughts on this?
I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I only saw clips at, you know, people who don't support AC Milan or Spurs. If you watch that game instead of the other one, you're stupid. Sorry. I mean, that's just a poor life decision. Now, if you did watch it, it is. I mean, come on, it is. Given the other matches that was presented to you, I don't care if it was Roma and Spurs. I'm watching the other game too. Anyway, all jokes aside, just a little shot there. It's all in good fun. AC Milan have figured out that the defender that they got from the Bundesliga that I've been telling you for the last 3 months needs to be used. Basically becomes a crucial piece of the victory against Spurs. It's amazing. Diaz scores, amazing. people tell me that there were Spurs fans are saying that the referee was horrible. AC Milan fans are saying the referee was horrible. How about you both just shut up? And because if you look at the game, it was very even. It was a one goal game. It wasn't one team that dominated or one team that deserved it much more than another. Just take it. It's still very open for season second leg. Good for AC Milan. Two of the underperforming teams, at least lately in Europe, put together and AC Milan win. Happy for them. And they'll have to go win it at Tottenham, and we'll see what happens there. But I don't really have too much to say about that one.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see anything from this match because I was busy. But I mean, the only thing I'll say is congratulations, AC Milan. Fuck you. And next.
All right. Now, this is the best. I think this was the best game from Champions League so far. You have Bayern Munich, arguably the best team in the world. PSG, a team that's flooded with superstars. Messi, Neymar played. Mbappe started from the bench. And the problem with this is you look at this game and you see what happened. It's dangerous going to Munich behind. And that's what PSG, unfortunately, are in that situation. And I believe they're in this situation because of how they started the game. Now, for the first 45 minutes, it looked like Bayern was going to score on every possession. Sorry, I keep using basketball lingo by accident. But it looked like they were going to score every time they had the ball. The ball was in PSG's danger area almost every single minute of that first half. They could have scored three or four. And PSG are lucky that it's not more severe than it actually is. The individuals of PSG could not overpower the team. Connectivity of Bayern Munich. They showed why they're one of the best teams in the world, and they really kind of put on a display in the second half. Kingsley Coman, a former PSG player, he only played a few games, but scored. The same guy who scored in the Champions League final against PSG scores another one. They take the lead, and everything's going swimmingly for Bayern. They want to get another, but it just doesn't go that way. Mbappe comes off the bench, scores, but the goal's offsides, correctly offsides. PSG continued to push and push and push during the last 20 minutes. They were unbelievable the last 20 minutes. Unfortunately, they were not good for the previous 70 minutes. Other than the performance of Nunez at right back or left back, whatever it was, one of the best in the world at position. He was absolutely unbelievable in his performance. And the individuals of PSG obviously came to play in late in that game, but couldn't really put it together collectively before that. I think they have a chance to do it. But it's because they got the goal in Paris. I think it's going to be more difficult for them to get one for PSG to overturn it in Munich. But the question is in the second leg, does the individuals overpower the team? I just think because of PSG's history in this competition and Bayern Munich being six-time champions themselves, I think they have the winning DNA to go and finish the job. But it's going to be in my opinion, not everybody's, but in my opinion, the perfect team against you could argue the perfect individual. So I'm really looking excited for the second leg. But in the first leg, Bayern Munich kind of ran it for most of it, but the individual brilliance of the last 20 minutes. It very well could have come out of this with a draw, but Bayern Munich got to take the goal into Munich.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bayern definitely did well dominating the at least 70 minutes of the match, but when you brought on Mbappe and made those key substitutions, the last 20 minutes, PSG really pushed. And, I mean, it's a bad situation to go into Bayern with, even if it's just a goal, it is still a goal nonetheless, especially knowing that you're going into Munich, which is one of the most craziest atmospheres to go into. And do I think, I mean, Bayern had the winning intangibles, winning six Champions Leagues, and then you also, depending on how things go, you could be looking at another German title for them this season. So they know what it takes to get the job done. I think they'll get the job done, but hopefully PSG wake the heck up and give us a good, exciting performance. But it's, you're right, it is going to be can the individual masterclasses go up against and destroy a team that has been a fortress for over the past two decades.
Yeah, and Sadio Mane will be available for the second leg, so I think that plays a factor into it. I think personally, if Bayern scores first, it's over. But if PSG score first, I don't think it's over though, because I think Bayern at home have the advantage there. But I think it's really interesting because of the individuals that PSG have against the team that Bayern has. So it's a really interesting dynamic. So it could go out either way. But I'm not going to bet against Bayern in Munich. That's just something I'm not going to do. But I do think this is still open, but I do think Munich go through.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're going to talk about Benfica versus Bruges.
Okay, before I say anything, this has got to be the biggest promotion ever. So the coach of Bruges has his team in the Champions League round of 16. A few months ago, he was the coach of Bournemouth and lost 9-0 to Liverpool. He went to losing 9-0 to Liverpool, and not a good Liverpool side, to being the coach of a team in the round of 16 of the Champions League. I just think that is just amazing. As far as the game goes, Bruges did score a goal that was disallowed correctly, but they never really were in it against Benfica. Benfica just wanted to make this close by missing chance after chance after chance after chance after chance in the first half. They could have been winning 5-0 at the break, but they just didn't go that way. They eventually get their goal through your boy João Mário. He used to play for Inter, now with 17 goals this season, which is funny. And then Benfica just do what Benfica does. They hold that lead. They don't really put themselves in a position to be vulnerable or concede. And then, obviously, Benfica get the second goal. A horrible mistake by the defense that totally betray their goalkeeper. And David Neres scores the goal to put them in that position, to put them in total control. And, granted, some collapse, I think they've more or less kissed their ticket into the quarterfinals. It is in Benfica. It's in Portugal. I can't see this Bruges team going to Portugal and not and finding a way through or finding a way back in. I think they'll get dominated. I think Benfica will sleepwalk to another victory. And I think it's done for Bruges. But never say never. 200 dunk teams. But I think doing this in Portugal is going to be almost impossible for the Belgian side. But yeah, it was a pretty good game, but I think Benfica could have scored a couple more, and I would be slightly disappointed in that performance if I'm a Benfica fan. But I think they got the two goals that they needed, and I think they more or less put them in that position now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This was definitely a great match to watch. Benfica really missed a lot of chances in the first half, but really stepped it up in the second and got those two goals, which. Yeah, I agree. They pretty much sealed their ticket into the quarterfinals. But if you're a fan of Benfica, you should be you should be disappointed that you didn't finish it. And if you you could have had 5 goals based on how good you were performing.
Yeah, 100%.
But overall, they still got the two goals that were needed and solidified that lead going into the second round. But I agree, they will not lose in Portugal. I mean, yeah. It's going to be very difficult for Bruges to be able to do that. But overall, it just shows how strong Benfica is. And I mean, yeah, they may not they. I mean, they're one of the most historic teams in Portugal for a reason. And so, overall, this was definitely a good match to watch, but we'll see what crazier things have happened. And so, we'll see what happens. And yeah. We'll just slightly touch base on the Dortmund v. Chelsea match.
All right. So, I'm going to recap this very quickly, and then you can do the same. This was a game, very, very competitive, very outstanding game between Chelsea and Dortmund. In Dortmund, you know, that yellow wall is always a factor. I love the way Chelsea played. I think, you know, it's this little things that they allowed that to happen. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Dortmund at all, because they played performance, great performance. They deserve to get something from the game. I don't think they deserve to win necessarily, but, you know, they found their way to do that on that amazing goal by Aremi, who unfortunately just decided not to represent Romania. So I don't get as excited as I could be because he picked Germany, which is probably the right decision, but he was eligible. But that great goal, and obviously another great, again, I've been saying it for months, that Julian Brand is the best player in Dortmund. And the only reason people aren't talking about him as a $100 billion player is because he's not 21 years old. And he's an older player. He's a veteran. He's not an older player. He's under 30, but really good player, hitting a really good performance. From Chelsea side, João Felix, I thought was tremendous. Everything like that. I thought Havertz had multiple chances to score. I thought they had too many chances not to stake in the back of the net. And some of these were just given goals. So in hindsight, Chelsea probably should have won this game. And the fact that they failed to do so, I think pressure is just going to lift and mount on Graham Potter. I can't see him being there for that much longer. I think it's a frustrating situation being because they played really, really well in a tough place to play and couldn't get out of it with the victory. Again, it's still all to play for in leg number two. But I do think the fact that Dortmund were able to take a goal in a game they probably shouldn't have won will give them the confidence to knock them out in round two. And I think this one's a coin flip, but I would say that I think Dortmund will go to Chelsea and do what they need to do just because Chelsea's been so horrible in the league this season and just in general. And, you know, they spent a lot of money this summer and this January. And the fact that that the Dortmund's young star on the way to an amazing goal goes right past 121 million signing, and with him not having a chance to stop the goal, I think was an interesting thing about it. But I think Chelsea were the better team. Chelsea probably deserved to at least get a draw here. But the fact that they didn't, I think, is going to be damaging for leg two. But you can't let Dortmund. If you're outplaying Dortmund in Dortmund, you can't let them off the hook. And Chelsea let them off the hook, and they had to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean that. First of all, Dortmund, your tifos are absolutely amazing. That's one thing I love about certain leagues where they're able to do stuff like that. That was absolutely freaking gorgeous. So the fans get their roses today. But yeah, both teams played really, really well. Chelsea was. I do agree, should have gotten something out of this match just how, based on how aggressive they were playing, especially against the Dortmund side. I mean, both of these teams have not been performing really well, but I will give Dortmund the edge.
Dortmund's been playing well lately, though. They just haven't been consistent. But, yeah, I totally agree. Continue.
But, yeah, I was going to say that they have picked it up recently. But overall, you cannot give Dortmund the amount of space that you did. And that goal was absolutely breathtaking. And yeah. I think it could end up biting Chelsea in the butt when they go back to England to play the second leg, especially since they haven't been performing well in the league itself. And but you, like we said with the Bruges Benfica game, crazier things have happened. So who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us and they'll get that momentum going. But it'll be very.
Let me ask you this: Would you be shocked if Chelsea won? Because I don't think I would be.
I wouldn't be either because they're not winning the league. I think they got eliminated out of the FA Cup or whatever thing they have over there. So the only thing that they have to really be able to win and focus on is the Champions League, which could go in their favor. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to pull it out, but I think Dortmund has the experience with experience to get things done, and I think they'll win, still win it. But I mean, Chelsea, if they still come from behind, I would not be shocked either way.
Yeah, I don't think the thing is with Chelsea and Dortmund, probably both of them. Actually, Dortmund might if they get hot. But I don't think Chelsea, even if they win this, are going to go on a deep run and make the semifinal or anything like that. But I think there's still a possibility for them to go in there. And again, I think it's going to be close. But I think Dortmund will take a lot of ammunition and energy from the fact that they were able to do this in a game where Chelsea probably outplayed them. So we're going to need to see Felix go into God mode before he gets a red card in a couple weeks when he plays Spurs. he may not, but Spurs signed someone who was the person in question with his girlfriend cheating. So I just assume he's gonna try to break the guy's leg. But no, all jokes aside, I think Felix, I think has to be in pure form, and he was absolutely sensational tonight. But Felix, Enzo, and Mudryk need to be on their best, and they have to score in front of goal. Now they didn't have the scoring issues that Inter did to the same respect, but they cannot waste chances again in the second leg, and I think whether they do that is going to determine who goes through.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And that's all we have for you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you guys on the next one. Ciao.